The New York City Marathon is this Sunday, and some tens of thousands will be running through all five boroughs. It attracts world-class athletes and amateurs alike, and got us thinking about what's involved with completing the marathon's 26.2 miles. David Willey, editor-in-chief of Runner's World magazine, and Charlie Butler, the magazine's executive editor and co-author of The Long Run, a New York City firefighter's triumphant comeback from crash victim to elite athlete, join us now to talk about how runners race, train, deal with injuries, and how regular people can start running for exercise. Hello, welcome to our show.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot.
First, I hear a big whooshing sound behind you, David. You're at the center for the marathon right now?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I'm at the media center for the New York City Marathon, which is set up at Tavern on the Green. Had some press conferences this morning, highlight Gebre Selassie, who is the world record holder in the marathon and widely regarded as the best runner in the world, did his press conference earlier. And yesterday, of course, was the press conference with Edison Pena, the Chilean miner, who arrived in New York at the invitation of the New York Roadrunners to take part in some fashion in the race festivities on Sunday. He said, "I'd love to come, but I want to run." And I have to tell you, I've never been to a press conference like this, certainly not one about distance running. There was a bank of cameras from all over the world. Every major media outlet was here. And very quickly, this guy who's never run a marathon in his life, and in fact never been out of Chile in his life, is pretty much the biggest story in the race.
Is anybody paying attention to Meg Kaplesigi, the American runner who won last year, the first time an American has won since 1982?
That's right. It was a huge win, and yes, they are. He had his press conference earlier in the week. He's had a very busy week. He launched a new foundation this week. He has a new book out, so he's doing publicity with that. But it's interesting. People, I don't want to say they're writing him off necessarily, but they haven't been talking about him as often. But I coincidentally had breakfast yesterday with some people in his training group from Mammoth, California, and they told me that Meb is as fit as he was last year, and that more importantly, he's healthy, which is often an open question with Meb. He has no injuries. They think he's ready to run 209 like he did last year and maybe even run 208. So I think he's a bit of a dark horse, which is odd to say for the defending champion. I think he's a bit of a dark horse to at least make the podium on Sunday.
Charlie, should I assume that since the both of you are editors at Runner's World, you're also runners?
I think you at least have to pretend to be one when you're out there. I know we have some very, very good runners on our staff. Ambie Burfoot, who won the 1968 Boston Marathon, has been on the staff for about 20 years as an editor and now as one of our top writers. David's a big runner. I've run four New York City Marathons. I won't be worried about being on a podium this Sunday. I'm more of the sort of mid-pack type runner that so many of the people who are running on Sunday, I think, fall in that category of.
Well, the New York City Marathon is world famous. It attracts runners from all over the world. Are the top runners concerned that anyone can register and run, or do they move out so far ahead from the start that plotters like you don't really affect their chances of winning?
The way the New York City Roadrunners Club has set up this course in this race now, there are, I think, at least five different starts. The first runners to go off are the wheelchair athletes, and then you'll have the elite women. I think they go off at about 9:10. Then 40 minutes later, the elite men go off. And then it's two more waves of more of the mid-packers who will not get in the way of the top runners. And it's perfectly set up that way. So for both television purposes as well as the crowd purposes, you'll see the top runners go off, run through the streets, and then you'll see all your friends kind of following over the next few hours.
David, how important is this race for competitive marathoners? How does it compare to the other top marathons in this country, Boston, Chicago, Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's the largest marathon in the world, first of all. And the New York Roadrunners and Mary Wittenberg, its president, have done a phenomenal job, as they do every year, assembling an amazing field. I really think this is perhaps the crown jewel. It's part of the World Marathon Majors, which is a consortium of races that includes New York, Boston, Chicago, London, and Berlin. So those are sort of the five biggies. But this, I have to say, I think that this is probably the most prominent one, and the one that I think people take the most pride in running. And if they're skilled and lucky enough to win, it's probably the biggest feather in their cap. It's no accident that Haile has chosen New York to be his American marathon debut.
Now, 45,000 runners are expected on Sunday, Charlie. I'd imagine that the starting line is something of a mob scene. What's your advice for dealing with running in a huge pack like that? Don't get pushed over?
Don't get pushed over. And also, I think, be smart, especially at the start. You're going to be very excited, especially if it's your first marathon. You want to go, let me run across that Verrazano Bridge as fast as I can. And you won't be able to, and especially if you're in that second wave of runners where you're going to kind of move as almost like tortoises across that bridge. In a way, you have to...
You're held back by everybody else.
Just the crowds. There's just so many people for that first mile or so. And until you really hit the streets of Brooklyn, will you see any kind of airway to make... and you're not there. New York is not a race where you're going to actually try to push yourself to do a good time. In most cases, you're there to enjoy the experience.
Are the most difficult stretches the later ones when you're really exhausted?
Probably. It all depends. You know, everyone talks about the Bronx being a difficult part of the race when the crowds are smaller, you're feeling tired. That's almost about mile 20 or so, where you still have six long miles to go until you're back in Central Park. So the end is difficult, but New York, the entire race, and I think, David, you would agree because you've done it, there's so many difficult parts. I mean, you talk about Haile Gebrselassie making his New York City debut. Some people say it's a difficult race for even him because you have five bridges. There's hills. It's a very difficult course.
And running on asphalt, does that really give your knees a pounding?
I think so many people train on it that they get used to it. I think we always advise do a little bit of running on softer grounds during your training, just because it'll help, you know, recovery. But in this day and age, most people are, you know, used to running on pavement.
We're talking about running on today's Please Explain with Charlie Butler and David Willey of Runner's World magazine. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Running requires very little gear, and it can be done almost anywhere. Are the right shoes the only thing that a runner needs? David?
Well, that's certainly the right place to start. If you have a pair of shoes and a change of clothes, you're ready to go, basically, wherever you are. Interestingly, there's a bit of a trend, not a new trend, but a newly popular trend of barefoot running these days, Leonard.
Is that a good idea when you're running through city streets?
I
hope they sweep up the glass before people start running.
No, I'll tell you, I have not done it through the city streets. I think it's a little bit risky.
What are the advantages?
Well, barefoot running is how we evolved as human beings, of course, to become distance runners. And if you ever go out and take your shoes off and start running, you will notice that very naturally you land on the ball of your foot more than on your heel. And if you heel strike, you tend to become a little bit more injury prone because our bodies just were not designed to absorb and dissipate the shock of running when we land heavily on our heels. So forefoot running, landing on the ball of your foot, is a better, healthier, and faster way to run. And barefoot running promotes that. But there's also a new sort of category of running shoes that are, quote, minimalist shoes, which borrow a little bit from barefoot running and are a bit of a happy medium between that and the traditional running shoes that the vast majority of runners are used to and have been running in for decades.
So, Charlie, if somebody is a beginner, should they go out and buy these sophisticated shoes?
They should definitely go to an expert and ask for that kind of advice. I think we always recommend go to a store that sells good running shoes, have the person take a look at your gait, what your feet are like, and what shoe is right for you. I think if you're a beginning runner, you may not want to go out and run barefoot because there's a lot of problems that can come up with that. But a good pair of shoes helps.
Well, it seems to me that running a marathon may be one of the hardest physical challenges imaginable, even for trained athletes. How can someone who isn't super fit train and complete one other than in, you know, huffing and puffing for quite a part of the distance? Either of you want to answer that? What do you recommend in your magazine?
Well, the key is to get on a training plan, Leonard. At very least, you want to spend 16 weeks, so 4 months, and you want to build up gradually and make sure that you stay healthy. Those are really the keys. You want to get on the starting line with a fitness level that will allow you to finish the distance, and it's a very difficult forbidding distance, 26.2 miles, but also without any injuries. And the way to do that is to follow a plan and that focuses on doing at least one long run per week, building up to probably 20 miles or 22 miles. You really don't want to do 26 miles as a training run before you run the marathon, because the effect on your body is just too great to do that before the race. But you want to get up to that 20, 21, 22 mile level about 3 weeks before your race. And then for those 3 weeks, some people do it for 2 weeks, you want to taper, which means you cut back drastically on your mileage, your weekly mileage, and you rest, and you allow your body to recover from the stress of a training plan and to be ready to be healthy and fresh on the starting line.
We'll be talking to our listeners in a few minutes. Our number here is 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Well, there are different kinds of runners. There are sprinters. Are sprinters good marathoners if they decide to take it a little easier, Charlie?
Are good marathoners?
Well, they do know how to run, don't they? Or are they running very differently?
They're running differently. They're running much, obviously, shorter different distances. Carl Lewis, who, of course, was one of the great gold medalists of the 1980s, just announced that he wants to run his first marathon in 2 years. And anyone who knows Carl, he'll probably do it because that's his goal. But he also said it's going to be one of the most difficult things I've ever done, because his body is just not used to the kind of training. And most sprinters are only maybe training levels of a mile. Their longest run may be a mile. It's a different ball game.
And it's going to be kind of chilly. Is that better than if it's – well, I would think that it's better than running in hot weather, but would you prefer that the temperatures just be a little warmer?
Sunday's going to be great for anybody who's running New York. I think it's supposed to be high 40s. That's almost ideal temperatures for this time of year, and you don't want to be sweating too much out there.
David, do you recommend training on a treadmill?
Well, sure. The important thing is that you get your miles in and you get your body acclimated to training. And if you are living in an area where there's a foot of snow on the ground and you just can't bear the thought of running in that, the treadmill is a great alternative. There are plenty of people out there who do all their running on a treadmill. In fact, the former colleague of Charlie's and mine at Runner's World, who is a mother of two, a working mother of two, she used to do all of her runs on a treadmill, including her 20-mile runs, you know, usually at the ungodly hour of 4 or 5 in the morning. But, you know, if you, as Charlie said, it is also important to spend some time out on the asphalt because the pounding is an issue, and you don't want to experience that for the first time during the race.
What about the best way to warm up? Is yoga helpful for runners?
I regularly do yoga. I make sure I get to at least one yoga class per week, and I do a fair amount just on my own because it is such a good cross-training activity. It has helped my flexibility. It's helped my core strength, and it just makes everything better. And warming up is important. I've gotten better at this as I've gotten older. I used to just like to blow out the door, but I can't really do that anymore. So I spend at least 5 or 10 minutes before pretty much every run doing some active stretching, some light jogging or even walking, just to get the muscles warmed up and the blood flowing before I actually start my actual run.
You have any other suggestions, Charlie?
Well, I think a lot of us, I mean, at our offices, a lot of us will go out for a run at lunchtime, maybe 10 minutes before. A lot of people say, I don't have time to stretch before a run. Well, you know, you get up and walk around the office, do a little deep knee bend in the office, knowing that you got a 12 o'clock run coming.
What causes cramps when people run? Do we know?
Well, often it's dehydration, which is a big issue, certainly for marathoners. Hydration is. And you want to make sure that you are regularly taking in some fluids Charlie's right. The forecast for Sunday is, I think in the 40s or 50s, which is very, very close to perfect. So maybe the inclination for some people is to not drink as much as they would on a hot day. That's a mistake. You want to make sure that you're continuing to take in fluid so that you don't get to that point of feeling dehydrated, because that is definitely when some cramps will set in.
What about eating before you run? When I was a kid, we were always told that we shouldn't go into the water right after we'd eaten, because we'd get cramps.
Yeah, I think that's been proven, at least now, to be a bit of a myth or a wise tale. But eating before any run is very important. It is absolutely essential before a marathon. You want to take in, some carbohydrates for sure, a little bit of protein. You don't want to do anything new. Race week and race day is not the time to experiment in any way with pre-race, what you eat and drink during the race at all. You want to stick with what's worked for you, but you definitely want to fill up your glycogen stores just the way that you would fill up a car with gas, so that you've got energy to get through this thing.
We're talking about running on today's Please Explain in advance of this Sunday's marathon, where 45,000 people are expected to run. Some of them, I'm sure, are listening to the show as we try to explain why anybody would want to do that to himself. My guests are Charlie Butler, executive editor of Runner's World magazine, and David Willey, editor-in-chief of that magazine. And we are taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We'll be right back after this. We're back with today's Please Explain segment, looking at running, with David Willey, editor-in-chief of Runner's World magazine, and Charlie Butler, executive editor of that magazine. And we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's get right to some of those calls. Matt from New York, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually training for an Ironman in 2013, and one of the step-up goals that I have is to run the New York Marathon, and I was actually calling to find out how you get registered in a marathon. I hear it's very difficult to get onto the run.
Is it, Charlie?
It has become a very, very difficult ticket, in a sense. It's tougher than any Broadway show.
Wait, 45,000 people. So what, they excluded people?
They have, I think, last year over 100,000 people applied for a spot in this race. And of those, obviously, only 45,000 are going to show up. I think they actually they give out registration to 50,000, knowing that a number won't make it to the starting line because of injuries.
And who did they exclude? I mean, other than Matt from New York, who's calling us right now.
Well, it's a lottery, they call it. So in that sense, I think there's a couple of ways, though, you can kind of maybe help your cause. I think now, if you run 9 New York City Roadrunner races during the year, you'll have at least I think it's a guaranteed slot into the race, which wasn't the case years ago. There's charity foundations that will have opportunities for you to join their teams. So there are ways to get in it, but a lot of it is luck, and there's so many people who have been shut out over the years.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Sure. And we go now to Jack from Garden City. Hi, Jack. You're on the air. By the way, I understand there are spots for sale on Craigslist. Is that legal?
Well, the race organizers certainly frown on that, but there is sort of a secondary black market, if you will, in big races, big competitive races like New York and Chicago and Boston.
Jack, are you there? Okay, well, Jack, thank you for calling anyway. A bunch of people have been writing in, and maybe I'll ask some of their questions. Diana is running on Sunday. She left this advice on our show page. This is my 5th New York City marathon. Despite what the speaker said, my biggest word of advice is to watch how fast you go out. New York Roadrunner has done so well at organizing the start that you can easily run it out at a full, I'm trying to get the rest of this thing, a full 2 minutes faster per mile than you should.
I I think that's excellent advice, and I unfortunately personally suffered the ramifications of doing just that in the two times that I ran New York City Marathon. It's so easy to get caught up in the energy and the excitement of the Verrazano Bridge. Then you're in Brooklyn, and honestly, before you know it, you've run 10 miles, and it feels completely effortless. You're in such good shape from your training. The energy level is so high. And if you go out too fast, you're not going to have enough for the second half of the course, which gets much hillier. And it is so key to not go out too fast. You almost want to have those first 8, 10, maybe even 12 miles feel a little bit slow, feel a little bit too easy, so that you're not in Central Park doing the zombie shuffle as I did.
Let's take another call. Larry from Woodbury, Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Larry Cavalieri. It's Westbury, and I just wanted to say, I'd run the marathon 5 times in New York City. No one's mentioned the spectators, and I think the joy of the race is just luxuriating in the thousands of spectators who all seem to be there just for you. It's just an amazing experience, and it's what gets you through the race. And if you're not out there to try and make time, you can just enjoy a leisurely 10-minute mile and get through it in 4 hours and 20 minutes and have a wonderful, wonderful, joyous experience. And it's all because of thousands of spectators that just, if you stay by the curb and you run and you put your hand out and little kids have their hands out to slap five with you, it's just an amazing experience.
Even at 10-minute miles, don't you get kind of exhausted near the end?
Well, you assume that you've trained sufficiently to complete a marathon. You shouldn't be attempting it if you have any doubt that you can complete it. And okay. if you engage in any of so many different training programs, you get to where you need to be. And when you get out there, you're so charged, you're so energized, looking at Manhattan going over the Verrazano Bridge, and you really walk over the bridge because there's so many people, you can hardly jog. And you don't get tired. You finish it, you just luxuriate in the entire experience, and it's the most wonderful thing. And I had a knee replacement several years ago, so I can no longer run marathons. But for my 60th birthday in a year and a half, I have intentions of walking the Rome Marathon in Italy.
Well, thank you for calling us. Laura asks, how do you prevent rib cramps, like right under your lungs? Am I not stretching right? I get these all the time, and the only way I can get rid of them is to walk for a while and then start running again after it's gone.
Yeah, walking will definitely help. There's also a bit of a trick. If you sort of apply pressure to the spot, and I know all runners know exactly what she's referring to, also commonly known as a side stitch. If you apply some pressure with your hand to the spot, not too hard, but, you know, do more than just touch it, and then breathe deeply in and out sort of through clenched teeth and do that 5 or 10 times, sometimes that will relieve the cramp.
A listener on Long Island asks, if you train up to a marathon, what can you do to maintain that level to run other marathons?
Well, it takes a long time, believe it or not, to lose the fitness that you've gained. You know, if you train for 16 weeks to build up your fitness, it stays with you for a while. You want to recover after your marathon and take at least 1 week off, sometimes entirely from running. It depends. It's up to the individual. But to maintain fitness, you don't have to stay with the same intensity of a 16-week program. You know, if you just get out there and even do 15, 20 miles a week, and keep doing some kind of long run. It doesn't have to be a 20-mile long run on the weekends, but if you even do 8, 10, or 12, you can really maintain your fitness so that when you do decide to pick another goal race and you do begin another training plan, your foundation will be there still.
Now, another listener, KP, asked, why limit yourself to 26.2 miles? Why not go on? In fact, he asked, could you run 50 miles at once?
I think more and more people are actually considering that. The growth of the ultramarathon crowd is growing, which is, you know, the people who are doing 50-milers, 100-miler races. So it's just what your goals are and how much training you're willing to put into achieving that.
That's a lot of pounding on your knees, isn't it? 50 miles, 100 miles?
You know, some people who have done these ultra races, they don't complain of any of these injuries. I think a lot of it, it's who you are and how you, you know, care for your body in between races and your training.
Well, let's take a call from Sam from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Has a way been found to replace torn meniscus?
Well, there are some experimental things happening for creating cartilage, human cartilage, artificially, and I have heard of those being injected into the knee in particular. I don't know if it's successfully been done with torn meniscus cartilage specifically. But, you know, in 5-10 years, I think it's possible that we'll see those things in the mainstream. But as of right now, I think it is still very, very experimental.
What about some of the other things that happen when people run shin splints, for example? Is that something that can be avoided?
Yeah, avoided if you are smart about your training and you don't overload yourself, you don't do too much too soon. Shin splints are one of a handful of what are known as overuse injuries, and there's a very familiar short list of them. They include plantar fasciitis, which is an area on the sole of your foot, runner's knee, which is tendonitis of the knee, Achilles tendonitis, and also ITB syndrome. The ITB is the iliotibial band that stretches from your hip down to the outside of your knee. And overuse and too much pounding and not enough stretching and having a disparity in strength or flexibility are really the culprits for that short list of common running injuries.
Let's take another call. Kathleen from Hoboken. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I'm running my first marathon on Sunday, and I'm starting to get to the point where I'm super, super nervous. My number one concern, though, is how is my body going to be able to complete 26 miles when the longest training run I've run has been 20 miles?
Kathleen, you are right on target. You've done 20. You know that most runners will say if you can do 20, those next six, they may be hard, but you can do it. Your body's prepared yourself. So I would just say, know that you've done your homework, go enjoy the test, you know, and you'll probably Sunday night, you'll see that medal around yourself and say, hey, it wasn't as hard as I thought, but you've done the work.
I'll believe it when I see it. Okay.
Good luck.
It is a bit of an article of faith. The flip side of that is the last 10K of a marathon, the last 6.2 miles are very, very difficult no matter what you've done. You know, nobody's trying to kid you that it's going to be easy, but whether you've done a 20-mile long run or a 25-mile long run, that last 6.2 miles is going to be a big challenge anyway. And the only upside to doing 25 instead of 20 is just that maybe you would remember the specificity of how much it hurts. Your body doesn't need to have that extra pounding. You've got what you need in the bank.
Are there certain people who should not run?
No, not really. I mean, it's always a good idea before starting a training plan for a marathon to check with your doctor. And certainly if you have any pre-existing health conditions, whether it's a heart condition or maybe you've had surgery, definitely want to check with your doctor. But just stand out and watch the marathon go by. You will see every type of person out there. You will see people who have survived cancer. You will see people running on prosthetic legs. You will see people who you probably wouldn't think would be distance runners because they have a certain kind of body type. They're bigger than you might expect. They're all out there, and they're all actually doing it. It's incredibly inspiring to see, and that's how I personally got motivated to do my first marathon in 1990, was by watching the New York City Marathon as a spectator.
There's a profile of the marathoner Alberto Salazar in this week's New Yorker. He's now coaching runners, and some of his methods seem to be rather controversial. He focuses a lot on form. The way people run does vary from person to person. Is there an ideal running form?
Well, as David was talking earlier, and I think this is what the piece you're referring to, he was trying to train Dathan Ritzenhain, who's one of America's top runners, to change his running style after, you know, doing it this way for about 20 years. And in his case, I think Alberto was saying he wanted Dathan to land on the forefront of his foot, which is the way to do it, maybe the ideal way. How do you change that? It's changing a way that has been successful. Can he do it? That's what I think Sunday we're all looking to see.
That's kind of like trying to convince somebody who has an eccentric batting stance to bat in a more orthodox way. It often ruins the person who has done rather well until then.
Right. And for Dathan, he's got something in his head now that he's probably wondering, will this work? I mean, he's working with a terrific coach, though, who's shown that he can not only, you know, Alberto won New York several times. So he knows what it takes to win a marathon of this
Well, but 13 of the fastest 25 marathon times on record were done by Kenyans. Why are they so much faster than people from other parts of the world? Do they train differently? Is it because they often train at higher altitudes?
There are a host of reasons. Location is certainly part of it. They not only train but live at altitude full time. There are cultural differences. Running is much more a part of the normal everyday experience in Kenya. They literally often do run to school both ways. There's also the cultural expectation that has been built up over decades and decades, and it's now widely known that if you live in Kenya and you are a talented runner, that there is a proven route for you to become a professional runner and really can transform your life. With the prize money in distance running, which pales in comparison to the big sports in the U.S., football, baseball, and basketball, it still is life-changing money for somebody who's in sort of an impoverished background in a small village in Kenya.
Now, just one more thing. Tom in Toronto left this tip. He says, do not drink too much. There are a number of well-known cases of people dying due to the mantra of keep drinking and hydrating. Then another listener wants to know whether if you're drinking all of that that Gatorade and water and whatever else, isn't there going to be a bathroom problem somewhere along those 26.2 miles? Do you want to address the first one? Is Tom from Toronto right?
Tom is correct. In that there's a condition where if you overdrink, you can, in a sense, called hyponatremia, where in a sense you are diluting all the saline or a lot of the saline in your system, and it has proven to be a dangerous condition where people have died post marathons from drinking too much. I think the beauty of this Sunday, with the conditions being cooler, it's not something that most people are going to have to worry about, but it is something to be concerned about come summertime.
You want to add to that, or should I move on?
Well, yeah, it's a condition called hyponatremia, and as if we need more information, you want to drink enough, but you don't want to drink too much. Hyponatremia, let's just be clear, is a very, very rare condition, and there have been a few fatalities. It is not a common life-threatening illness.
Most healthy people will not have a problem. Danielle, who's a spectator at the marathon, says, could you please put your names on your shirts, because it's great to hear people yell out, go Tom, go Mike, go Sally, go Shirley. And my thanks to both of my guests, David Willey and Charlie Butler, both at Runner's World magazine, for being so helpful in explaining on today's Please Explain what running is all about.
Thank you for having us, Leonard.